Welcome back to Travoltine Presents Easy Riders. Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore. Covering Brothers with special guest Justin Campbell.
In theory, shouldn't we have used the Fraser's Edge music?
Welcome back to Travolting Presents The Fraser's Edge, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, covering Brothers with very special guest, Justin Campbell. Enjoy the episode.
Wow, this is a disaster.
Stuart, Wolfman or Dracula?
Well, it depends on the rules.
Wolfman or Dracula?
Dracula.
Dracula, you know, you're right. Dracula is 365. Wolfman's only once a month.
Wolfman's only once a month. But yeah. If you believe in the 2004 Hugh Jackman, Kate Beckinsale, Van Helsing rules.
Yes.
Werewolf is the only thing that can kill Dracula.
It's true. That is the plot point in that movie.
that I could just pull
that
up.
You just pulled out of your head. I watched that movie this year and I couldn't remember that.
Fuck.
Yeah.
What'd you watch it for?
Becca
has a crush
Becca
on that
likes
movie.
That movie.
Yeah. Becca
it is like a guilty pleasure. Like,
yeah.
She kind of has this thing for like that mid 2000s. I can't even describe what the genre
that
is, but
aesthetic.
It's like,
I
but
know
it's
exactly
Van
what
Helsing,
about.
Constantine, like League of Extraordinary Gentlemen.
Underworld.
I don't know if she's seen Underworld, but like The Matrix.
She's got to watch Underworld.
That's specific.
If she likes
I'm
that
sure
aesthetic.
She's seen Underworld, to be
she's
honest.
She's got to watch it.
Underworld 3 is the best one.
Anyway, we're not here to talk about Underworld or Van Helsing.
Oh.
We're here to talk about the 2024 motion picture Brothers, finally released, promised on the show years ago.
Yeah, it was promised years ago. And this is not to be confused with the 2009 Tobey Maguire, Jake Gyllenhaal brothers.
Yes.
Where you know what I did? The fuck did
not that movie.
The thing about this movie is that it was shot, I believe, before Killers of the Flower Moon.
No shit.
And what? Potentially before The Whale.
Was it just shopped around?
So I'm checking right now.
I wonder what budget this was. It was Amazon MGM, though, but that was what it was distributed by.
So
it was produced by Legendary Pictures.
Yeah, so The Whale gets shot, like, beginning of 2021. This is shot basically immediately after that.
Oh, wow.
This starts shooting in June of 2021, or August of 2021.
Principal photography, August 2021 in Atlanta.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this
okay. Wow.
Killers of the Flower Moon. Let's find out when that was filmed. This starts production. Began principal photography April 19th of 2021. Okay. So he squeezes The Whale, Killers of the Flower Moon, and this out immediate succession.
Wow.
Wow.
Like mere months between. Those are all filmed at the same time. And then after that, he actually doesn't film another movie for several years. Until
really?
Recently, like post his Oscar win, that's when he's, you know, making movies again, that we've recently talked about, like the upcoming, he's been cast in a lot of stuff recently. So he's working consistently again, but like he does The Whale, cause Flamer and Brothers, immediate succession and then doesn't get another movie deal besides Batgirl, which happens somewhere in the mix, and never gets released until after his Oscar. But it is kind of funny that this, like, you know, we talked about The Whale and Killers of the Flower Moon right around their release dates, roughly. Mm-hmm. The Whale was a little bit after. Killers of the Flower Moon, our episode came out the week after the movie came out.
Yeah.
And yet, like, this took a whole other year and a half, basically.
Yeah.
To come out beyond those movies. Because it was, you know, made and then shopped around for a long time.
Yeah.
Never to be discussed. And then finally in October of 2023, Amazon bought the rights to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then we just never heard about it again until like 2 months ago, I'd say roughly.
Yeah.
We just got they sent the like a low key press release. Just like it will be released to select theaters early October. And then it will be on Amazon
Prime a week after. Yeah.
And it's kind of seemed like it was just kind of like absorbed into the content sphere. Of Amazon Prime.
And watching the movie, you kind of understand why.
Yeah, you watch the movie and you're just like, well, yeah, this guy just exists.
Yeah.
Which is disappointing to me because I was expecting more from this. Because this is directed by Max Barbico, who has only directed one other movie, but that other movie is Palm Springs.
Oh, wow.
Which I don't know if you guys watched Palm Springs.
Yeah.
No, but I've heard of that. It was good.
It's a
good
it was movie. The great surprise of 2020. Like, yeah. You know, when they were kind of releasing a lot of slop during the pandemic, and then there were a few movies that you expected to be good, like Defy Bloods or something.
Yeah.
But then Palm Springs just kind of slid in under the radar and was excellent. Incredible movie, and it was perfect release for the pandemic. It's about, you know, being in a time loop.
Mm-hmm.
And so this being his immediate follow-up to Palm Springs, is like, oh, this might be good and has a great cast. Peter Dinklage, Josh Brolin, Glenn Close, Brendan Fraser. I'm like, this could be, you know, something special. I had my hopes. They were not fulfilled.
Not fulfilled.
I mean, it's also written by Macon Blair, who is, in addition to being Oppenheimer's lawyer in the movie Oppenheimer, also just a kind of a fun screenwriter. I know people quite like I Don't Feel at Home in This World Anymore and his new Toxic Avenger movie.
Oh, yeah. He does have a good amount of acting
credits. Yeah. He's like kind of a real, kind of like a real one. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's okay. A lot of talent behind the screen and in front of the screen in this movie. And then you kind of just get like,
meh.
Like, I know milquetoast is like a word spelled M-I-L-Q-U-E, but this movie.
Time out.
Wait.
Hang on.
Hold on. He's got to
find the sound to match the reaction.
Hold on.
What?
Like, I know that milquetoast is not quite literally milk, as in like a glass of milk and toast.
Uh huh.
But this movie is milk. Toast. Like, the best way I can describe watching this movie is like you have a slice of toast and a glass of milk.
What's like, wrong with that? That was
there's
like,
nothing wrong with that.
It's
necessarily.
Just not great.
It's just like you're getting what you expect out of it. Like
that's fair.
It's like, yeah, it's kind of dry. I should put a little more butter on it.
Yeah.
And the milk is milk. It's not chocolate milk. It's not strawberry. It's just milk.
And you spell milk M-I-L-Q-U-E.
No, that's how you spell the word milk toast. But this is like literal milk and toast, the movie. Which I believe makes sense.
Justin, you're in a very interesting position because the last time we had you on this in terms of Fraser was The Whale.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I want to ask you, what were your expectations for this movie?
I didn't really see much about it. Like initially when I saw it on your guys' list, I originally thought it was the 2009 Brothers
with Tobey Jake Gyllenhaal.
And I was like, Brendan Fraser was in that movie? Like, I don't even remember him. You know, and then I saw like the poster or the screen grab of like the cover of the movie. And I was like, it'll be okay. I mean, it was better than I thought it would be.
The thing that I find very interesting about this movie in relation to the subject of our show, The Fraser's Edge.
Yeah.
No button. I know. Is that, like, this is made in an era where Fraser is not back. Like, he's not cast in this movie off of The Whale or off of Killers of the Flower Moon's success.
Yeah, you're right.
He's cast in this movie like, oh, he's cast off of, like, No Sudden Move is, like, the most recent thing he's been in.
This is, like, a No Sudden Move era.
This is like,
movie.
Oh, yeah, Brendan Fraser, he's acting again. People are saying good things. We'll throw him in a little funny role.
Yeah.
And then it gets delayed for so long that it comes out in a post-Fraser's back environment.
Which is like, hey, good on the producers.
Yeah, like they're very lucky.
Lucky for delaying
one
it a
One guy
little
in the
bit.
Office is like, hear me out.
But I find that really funny when you look at his performance in the movie.
Yeah.
Because post The Whale in his Oscar win, he's been getting cast in basically lead performance. Like, none of these movies have come out yet. But all of the roles he's been cast in since are like, he is
like
Dwight D. Eisenhower in Pressure.
What the fuck?
He is seemingly the main character in Assassination, the Barry Levinson JFK movie that I'm very excited to talk about when it comes out. And this is just like the one little thing that just kind of trickled in where it's like, Brendan in a fun character role.
I think I've actually like heard through the grapevine that Rental Family, which...
Oh, and Rental Family, of course.
It's in post-production. There's not been any press, but just through the grapevine, I've heard that he's really good.
Yeah.
Just from, like, the stories.
Yeah, it seems like he's good, and he's the lead of that.
Yeah, and he's the lead of it.
And yet, when I watch this movie, I am just like, what if this is the zone he just existed in?
like
bit. Just like character bits.
If Whale and Killers didn't exist, or
no, if Whale didn't exist,
but Killers existed, and it's like, and it was that
no
sort
sudden
of,
move, Killers of the Flower Moon, Brothers, just like Brendan Fraser coming in for like a 15-20 minutes of your movie, throwing heaters,
throwing bombs,
like
throw it in.
This is the zone. Like, I'm obviously softer on the Whale than you guys are. And this is kind of the zone where I just want to see. Like, this movie's not very good, but I think he's so funny in it that it elevates the whole movie.
He is really funny in this movie. And he's probably the only funny thing in this movie, besides the very expensive orangutan.
Yes, the orangutan is good.
Which we'll talk about. I was like, that's the budget of the movie right there.
Like, we've talked a lot about Fraser as kind of like an egoless performer.
Mm-hmm.
And in this movie, he's just like willing to just be the ass of the whole movie.
Yeah.
The butt of the joke.
The butt of every single joke in this movie.
Yeah.
He gets like assaulted by an orangutan. He's like shot at by M. Emmett Walsh in his final film performance. He's like tumbling around and just screaming in all of his scenes.
I am justice!
He's great in this.
It's really good.
And I'm like, this is where I want to see Fraser at. Now, I'm sure, like, I'm not going to, like, you know, say these movies won't be good, because Rental Family, Assassination, Pressure could all be very good, and he could be good in them, and I hope that he is.
Mm, yeah.
But I'm just kind of like, I kind of just don't want him in the, like, the main lead role. In a lead capacity.
Yeah.
I kind of want him just in this character bit. Like, because he crushes it in this, like, three-movie run of character bits.
Well, I think the sad thing is, like, it's hard for me to see a reality where he can do both.
Yeah.
And I think he's going to go the lead performance route. Of course, yes, you would. Yeah. But there's a part of me that's not, like, upset about that.
Yeah.
Only because, like, I'm looking at, like...
I'm happy for him.
Looking at the premise of Rental Family, I'm like, that seems like it could be, like a very... what's the kind of tone movie that I'm thinking of? Like, just, like, a very, like, comforting comedy where he plays, like... Like a good, like, comedic but yet wise presence in the movie in that kind of lead role tone.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I'm thinking, and then given that he's also going to be Dwight D. Eisenhower doing those Eisenhower bits, whatever that.
No, I'm
excited for that. But I do understand what you're talking about. And I do kind of think, like, oh man, like, if we could just get, like, one more.
Just
the
happiest just one
thing
more
for me would be if we found out that Pressure was a movie, like, about D Day and then, like, occasionally it would cut back to, like, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Like, it's like that would be kind of the dream,
right?
Where, like, he's just coming in, like, every 20 minutes you're checking in with Dwight.
How you doing, man? Sweating.
And he's just crushing it.
He's like, I don't, what the fuck do we even do at this point?
The planes can't reach the beach. What? What do you mean? We plan for the mines, guys.
Like, I hope Fraser recreates the kind of, like, the Slay Dwight D. Eisenhower official portrait.
My God.
Have you guys seen this before?
Yes.
It's like my favorite image. I hope he does that.
This, you have to. That should be the cover of the movie.
That made Iowa go blue right there.
Yeah, this is like, I'm not going to use this word lightly. He's serving cunt in this picture.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is the first time I think I've ever heard Jeff use the term serving cunt.
about former President Dwight D. Eisenhower.
Oh, my God.
If a president posed like that, I'd vote for him.
Imagine if Biden did that right now. He would win the write-in vote, like, 90% of the country. It would be an electoral, like, landslide, not, the likes of which not seen since 1984.
Oh, my God.
That's good. Cunt
Biden just goes, he's like, oh, I'm putting my leg up on you. Here's the thing. Here's the deal. Kamala would be like, no, Joe. And there's, like, all these write-in votes come in. Joe Biden.
That would truly push the dark Brandon agenda.
Yeah, dark Brandon agenda.
What a story, Mark.
What a story, Mark. Yeah.
All this to say. That I, even though I didn't, like, enjoy, like, love this movie, it's, like, kind of an easy watch. It's not, like, actively upsetting or offensive at any point. Like, some of these god-awful things we've had to talk about.
Yeah.
But I, like, every time Fraser comes in, I'm just like, he's got it.
Yeah.
He's cooking.
Yeah, I agree. Every time he came in, I was hooting and hollering for him.
This movie really made me want to see the Batgirl movie. Like, I want to see what is...
You should talk to Mark Tilly because he's from an alternate dimension where the movie exists.
Really?
Yes, it's true.
Oh,
brother, this guy stinks!
Stuart loves this shit. But no,
but I agree. Yeah. I would love to, like, knowing what he's doing in this movie.
Right.
Oh my God.
Well, like,
oh my God.
I was writing notes for this movie. And when you first see him, I'm like, you know, for some reason, as a bad guy, like, he just sounds really anxious and shaky. Yeah. And then you see him at his dad's house, and I'm like, oh.
Yeah.
Now it all makes sense.
This is the energy of his character.
Yeah. Right.
Do we just want to, like, go through the plot of this thing, or do we want to talk more about Brendan?
I mean, like, the only other thing I was going to say is, like, Peter Dinklage and Josh Brolin are in this movie.
They are the titular brothers.
And they're in the movie. That's all I'm going to say.
The thing that's clear off of casting them is that this movie is in some way trying to recreate the energy of Twins.
Okay.
Danny DeVito, Arnold Schwarzenegger movie.
Yeah.
This is explicitly what this was described at when it was first pitched, is like a kind of new take on Twins, which is, you know, Danny DeVito and Arnold Schwarzenegger. Like, just being kind of an odd couple because there's nothing similar between those two guys.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is roughly the juice of this movie. Supposed to be.
But they don't juice that lemon at all.
Yeah, they aren't like...
They make one throwaway line. It's like, he's my twin brother. And they're like, oh, there's a look, and that's it. That's the bit.
Yeah. Like, the bit of Twins is that, like, they're a very unlikely pair of twins. I want to be, like, respectful because I know Peter Dinklage is very much like, I don't like playing roles where my dwarfism is
the subject.
Part of the subject.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Like, he did Game of Thrones, where that was like the big, you know, his character's big arc in that movie, in that show.
Yeah.
And since then, he's like mostly tried to just, you know, play real roles.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like what I want this movie to be for him.
Right.
But when you're instinctually trying to like connect it to Twins.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, you're on this uneven ground here.
It's like you're trying to like give Dinklage what he wants, but you're also like, but we're casting you to like, emphasize the bit.
Yeah, like don't say that this movie is like your way of, you know, remixing Twins if you don't want that.
Yeah.
You can call it Brothers and you can have these two guys be in it and just have them play brothers.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's what the movie is. But don't like the try
twins,
and yeah.
Well, as I said, the Twins bit's like a 3 second long look.
Yes.
That's the joke.
Yeah.
There's no need for that bit.
Yes.
And that's why, like, I don't know. Like, I this has been, what has Dinklage been doing since Thrones?
He's been in a lot of like weird stuff, I think.
I mean,
right?
He put a lot of his like post Thrones stock into Cyrano, which is a movie, it's a musical that is, to my understanding, people quite like it.
It's like a Roman thing, right?
No, it's you know, an adaptation of the 1800s play Cyrano de Bergerac, turned into a musical. I believe his wife wrote the musical, and he stars in like the film adaptation. People quite like that movie.
Mm.
I have not seen it, but then he's also like, he's just kind of been in a lot of random stuff. Like, he's in the new Hunger Games movie. He's quite good in it. The New Hunger Games is good. He was in The Toxic Avenger, which is directed by Macon Blair, who wrote this movie.
Yeah.
So I think they enjoyed working together on this.
Yeah.
He voiced Scourge in Transformers Rise of the Beasts.
There's a lot of voice credits. Yeah.
He has a great voice, so I can't blame him.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
He plays Eitri the Dwarf in Avengers Infinity War for some fucking reason.
Oh, yeah. Which is just him being a giant?
Yeah, which is just him being a giant. For like a scene. I don't know why he's in that movie.
I mean, that's like 2018 though.
Yeah, that is 2018.
So it's like Thrones the peak of Thrones fame for him.
It appears he is in the Wicked movie as Dr. Dillamond, which is a voice role.
Yeah.
I think I tried to find gravity. Oh, sorry.
But then Jeff, I just clicked on his upcoming, which is 4 credits. Do you see one of them?
Roofman, Wicked Part 2, and Lear
no,
Rex?
It's The Dwarf.
Oh,
there's
really?
Literally a movie in development that's called The Dwarf, where he plays the dwarf.
I mean, it makes sense, I guess.
Yeah, but it just goes again with like the whole, like, you know, if that's what you're trying to avoid, which I totally agree on that, Like if that Game of Thrones was
I feel like that might be something that he put into, you know,
maybe that's his.
It seems like this movie was last discussed 5 years ago, so I don't think it's happening.
Then maybe
anymore,
maybe I'm speaking too soon on that. Maybe that's just another.
The dwarf was discussed 5 years ago.
Yeah. I think that might not be happening anymore.
Okay. Okay. Gotcha. And then Josh Brolin in this movie.
Josh Brolin, who is just like kind of great.
Just a guy.
He's always great. When's he bad?
But he's,
I mean, he doesn't have much in the,
there's not a lot of him to do. And the things he does do in this movie, I was like, okay. Like he's like, I can narrow down his character in like just a word and it's like dweebish. Like he's a dweeb.
His bit in this movie is that he is no longer involved in crime. He is married. He's going to have a baby.
His wife sucks.
wife does suck.
Yeah.
Not to railroad this, but I totally get like being mad because like, you know, what Brolin's character does, he does what Moke does. But to be that angry at him the whole time.
Yeah. Like his mom is dying at one point, supposedly. It's like this movie like seemingly had one pass through the script and they're like, the actors will spice it up. Mm-hmm. And then the actors are not able to spice it up because it's so like vanilla.
Yeah.
This might be the calmest role I've ever seen Josh Brolin in. Like, just a dad.
Like, he doesn't have a funny bit.
Yeah.
In a movie like this, they both need to have funny bits.
But like
they don't have funny bits.
The orangutan bit could have been, I could have been like rolling on the floor laughing at that bit. But it's just so, like you said, it's very first draft script joke where I'm like, okay. But you spend a lot of money on that orangutan.
Yeah. They spend a substantial amount of money on that orangutan.
Went into that orangutan. Yeah. And I'm like, because guys, like.
No, because like, ostensibly their bits are that like Dinklage is like the wild one and Brolin's kind of the normal one.
Read it more like Dinklage is like the daredevil, like bank robber.
Yeah.
And his brother's the like unwilling accomplice. Yeah.
But the movie doesn't really do much with them. Like Dinklage isn't that crazy in the movie.
He
smokes weed at one point.
Yeah.
And then he like gets beat up by Brendan Fraser. And then he like has crazy sex with Marissa Tomei.
Yeah.
But like, what else does he do in this movie that like is crazy?
It's a very hard movie to watch and talk about after you've seen Hell or High Water. Mm-hmm. It makes this movie very difficult to discuss because it's like Hell or High Water is like the perfect version of this movie without being a comedy, of course, that it's not a comedy. But like, it's still like, that's like two brothers, Robin Banks, chased by Jeff Bridges, and it's a fucking amazing movie.
Great movie.
It's such a simple concept, but like concepts like fucking brothers.
That's Jeff Bridges. That's my impression of Jeff Bridges in that movie.
I got a shot at him. You don't take
you
it.
Got a shot at him.
That's my shot. I'm gonna take my shot on him. You kill my partner. Before I die, shoot you down.
That's like the most mumbly he's ever been.
He's very mumbly. He's very mumbly. Hell or High Water.
Love him. But he's very mumbling.
Ben Foster, Chris Pine. Goddamn.
He is a crisp pine.
Like, how can you talk about brothers?
Yeah. I think we should just start going through the movie. But I want to just point out one thing that annoys me about this movie. And I say this with all due respect. I am a little sick of these movies that are shot in Atlanta, set in Atlanta, and have this specific energy to them. Because the area surrounding Atlanta.
Hold on a second. Go.
Like Atlanta passed a lot of tax incentives. There's a lot of movies filming in Atlanta.
Yeah.
In a lot of cases, they're like, "Oh, Atlanta is Philadelphia, or Atlanta is some other city," right?
Yeah.
And then I saw Clint Eastwood's Jur No. 2 last night, which is a great movie. It's also filmed in Atlanta and set in Atlanta. Mm-hmm. And like, it's boring as shit. Like, there's nothing interesting going on. There's no texture to these movies. It's like the most boring built in the past 10 years suburban locations I've ever seen in my life.
Are you saying Atlanta's a boring city to film in?
I am basically saying that, yes.
Hot take.
Whoa.
I am basically saying that. There are good Atlanta movies. But it's like this white bread, corn ass Atlanta.
Man, how are people feel about Chicago?
No.
I will say Chicago, like,
Chicago has texture.
Chicago has texture in the city.
Yes, which is why whenever they film in Chicago, they film in the city.
There's in the city that can look. I mean, you could film a whole underworld movie in Lower Lower Wacker.
Yes,
and that's your whole set. That's your whole set. Yeah, but like I've never been in a movie set in Atlanta. I don't know what their usual
like. You watch this.
Are.
The thing is, you watch this movie, and you're like, "Yep, looks like Atlanta."
Well, like, but it looks like Atlanta because it's never shot in the city, metropolitan. It's always like in a fucking cornfield suburb.
Yeah, but like, and even when they're running through the forest, I'm like, it feels like a forest in Georgia.
Yes, that's my point. You're absolutely right because like, I can't help but imagine like we're all PAs in this industry. Yeah. You can't help but imagine it's like, oh, like what are you working on? It's like, oh, I got this feature coming up in a week. It's like, oh, have fun driving an hour out of the city every fucking day because that's all these movies do now.
And there's just so many movies that look like this now.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And like even the shooting style in Atlanta, like I'm like, I feel like I've seen this bar that they've been to where they're all singing karaoke.
The Georgia Southern Forest is like the most fucking like I've seen that tree.
I know where they're running. I'm glad you agree with me on this.
No,
because
I'm
just like,
I 100% do because like the only reason why like I threw in the Chicago bit was because I'm trying to think of movies that were like in the Atlanta metropolitan.
And like the thing is like when you look at like the big hub cities, like, you know, let's just say LA, Chicago, New York, the areas around those three cities
are still pretty distinct.
Like you can like get essentially different look. Like there's a studio map from the 20s of Los Angeles from Paramount. It's like, this is India. This is Africa.
Oh,
you can drive this way.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Everything looks different.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Like,
California's got an advantage.
I'm not trying to disrespect the fine people of Georgia, but like their state is very ubiquitous. It looks very
Georgia.
It looks very Georgia.
It is like, I mean, as someone who's been in that area, not in the filming business, but just like in the area a lot, like it is like you got your forest, you got your swamp, and you got your asphalt roads.
Yes.
And that's.
And because the state has the state of like Georgia has been growing a lot. Like there's a lot of investment going into that state.
Yeah.
And so there's a lot of new construction. And so when you watch movies like this and you're just like, this is the most built in the past 10 years community I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
Like driving down this like, I've been to Savannah, Georgia, which is a very old city and has a lot of texture to it.
Yes. Yeah.
But then like you watch this movie and you're just like, this is the most boring like location I've ever seen in my life. There's no history here.
No. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which, and I'm not saying that's like good for that community, good for Atlanta. I support you.
But at the same time,
I'm a little sick of it.
I'm a little sick.
I mean, like,
I watched Clint Eastwood's Juror Number 2 last night. A great movie. Even he, at 94 years old, is susceptible to this. And I'm like, oh my God, I swear to God, I've seen this Ale House before in a movie.
I would say, like, in Chicago, you're right. Like, there's a lot of texture in the city. I'd say, like, when we see these movies and stuff that branch out of the city, then we get our same mono culture. Farmland.
Mm-hmm.
But like, see, we have at least two bits. We have the suburbs and we have the rural. I feel like in Atlanta, there are
suburbs, but then
but it's all very like the same rural.
I don't want to harp on it anymore, but I think you guys understand what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
There's a very, you know, Atlanta is cheap to film. So a lot of these movies that are like trying to be filmed for cheap.
It's starting to look like they're being filmed there for cheap.
Yes.
And I think
that's basically what I'm
that's
saying.
That's
like
the dinger right there.
They're going there because it's affordable.
Yes.
Which is good for like
that. Good for business.
Good for business.
The community. Yeah.
Good for the film community of Atlanta.
Glad you guys are working.
Glad you're all working. But like it is just kind of producing these saint because I think this movie looks like every late stage Travolta we've talked about.
No, you're right.
Like Cash Out, Two High Rollers, which we haven't talked about yet, but I know what it's going to look like.
Yeah.
All these movies filmed in Atlanta because it's cheap.
It gets bad to a point when like you can look at it and you can be like, I feel like this was filmed in Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
And that you say that not in a good way.
Yes.
And you're like, oh, okay. And it was filmed in Atlanta. And you're like, why did you notice you thought it was filmed in Atlanta? I was like, because it looks pretty cheap.
All the Marvel movies, for the most part, filmed in Atlanta. But that's like all soundstage work.
That's all sound. Yeah.
Except, and then like occasionally they'll go to like a little town or something.
Occasional little town.
But like, I think about Guardians of the Galaxy 3, a movie I think is rather fantastic. It's one of the best of the Marvel movies by my reckoning. It was made by a real director. And that movie is entirely set in space.
You said it like it was controversial, Jeff.
That movie's set in space.
Yeah.
It's all like green screens and sets. Very well-designed sets. The end of the movie, Star-Lord, Peter Quill, notoriously normal guy Chris Pratt, comes back to America to see his dad. And I can't remember. I think he's from Kansas or something. I can't remember where in the movie, the first movie, he's actually from.
I think it's Missouri.
Missouri, you're right. He sets down his little ship, whatever the fuck it's called, and he gets out. And it is the most cornbread ass, like, Atlanta suburb I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah.
It looks like a scene from this movie.
Yeah.
And Star-Lord, like, walks up and dunk, 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 and his dad opens the door and is like, oh, son. It's very touching. I wept in the theater.
Wow.
But I was just like, that's the most boring street I've ever seen in my life.
Well, let's stop harping on it. Let's move on.
2025, Jeff V. Atlanta.
Yeah.
Look, I've...
Let's move on. Yeah, let's go. Yeah.
Go away. Come on. Oh, brother.
Okay. No, all right. Let's start talking about this. Right. Let's go through this.
This movie starts off with everybody's favorite trope in movie, which is voiceover explaining the life.
Yeah, as we get young actors playing young versions of these characters.
Hi, my name's J.D. Munger.
Yes.
And my life's a little crazy.
Yeah. You could say my family's not the normal type.
Yeah. Because my mom... She's a criminal, but that's okay.
We come from a long line of criminals.
Yeah, it's something that is never again harped on.
No, because what did their grandparents do? We don't know.
They're seemingly criminals.
Bonnie and Clyde. Duh.
Maybe.
But like that is kind of the implication that their mom is like Bonnie and Clyde. Mm-hmm. And like, I forget what the guy's name is.
Glenn.
He's so fucking cool.
Glenn
so
is very cool. That's right.
He's very cool.
That's a good bit. Fucking cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
But... There's Moke, played by played by Josh Brolin.
Yeah,
and then JD, played by Peter Dinklage.
J A D Y. By the way,
they're 12 years old. They're trying to like open a lockbox from school, and they're using firecrackers to do so. And they're like, stepdad comes over, like, you boys ain't shit. That's basically what happens.
That's what happens.
But then they get the lockbox open. But before they can really enjoy their winnings, their mom. Skirts up to the house. Glenn has been shot. And she's like, boys, we got to get running for a little bit. I see ya. And then she takes off.
And Moke is like, can I come with you? It's like, no, you're a fucking useless pile of shit.
Shit.
I couldn't use you.
Yeah.
But she takes a plate of turkey, which is a funny bit. She like because it's Thanksgiving.
That's because Glenn's fucking hungry.
It is Thanksgiving, right?
And then it turns out they had stolen emeralds. Glenn eats them.
Prime move.
He just like
eats them, and then he dies.
And then he fucking dies because you just put like sharp toxic emeralds into his digestive tract.
I also feel like he lost and he's been shot. Of blood.
It's like rookie mistake. You're supposed to have like a bag or something and swallow the bag so they don't protrude.
That'd be like you get shot and you're bleeding out and you're like, I'm going to eat knives.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do now.
Well, time to be.
What are we doing here?
Cut to 30 years later or however many years.
I think it was 15 years.
15 years later.
Yeah.
They're robbing a warehouse of sorts.
They're robbing.
There's also like ND the Atlanta warehouse.
ND Atlanta warehouse. Yes. Well, it's like there's also the classic like graphic art like newspaper clippings of like young boys steal this shit.
Oh, like the intro.
Yeah.
Like, whatever.
It's just the most like Jeff, you said Milquetoast. It is the most like a recently graduated film student wrote this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm sorry. Making Blair
two actually
Eaton,
well
Eaton Cohen.
Like
but like
well
you're using the same fucking tropes that like every film student uses. It's like the voiceover of what my life is like right now, zoinks, and then it's like and our family is
kind of crazy
intro sequence, and then do, and it's like the graphic art.
Like, I went to prison down the street.
Yeah. And then with the newspaper graphic art showcasing their life. And then like the very last bit is the mom is missing.
For 25 years.
That's not going to be a thing in our movie. Wink, wink, wink. And then, they're in a warehouse robbing a warehouse.
Robbing, right? That's
they're
it.
They're robbing. They're doing their thing. They get caught.
Yes.
Short story long. Yeah, it doesn't work.
Well, no.
Peter Dinklage is the one that gets caught. And then Josh Brolin is like, skirt. And
he gets out of there.
He gets out of there. Smart move, by the way.
Yeah.
And then we cut to 5 years later.
Yes.
Peter Dinklage, swole.
Swole as fuck in prison.
He is swole. And the handlebar mustache.
Yes. He's looking
that,
good.
That was a thick fucking mustache, too. All yeah. gas, no brakes.
But why male models?
But why male models?
But why male models? And so he's in prison, and there's more like voiceover shit about like, I have like, I'm getting out on parole. Mm-hmm. And this is where we get the first Fraser bit, because he's like about to get released for parole, and that's when Brendan Fraser shows up as officer, Peace Officer Farfel.
Farfel.
Yes. Brendan Fraser. Have you seen No Sudden Move?
I have not, sadly.
Like, the only thing I'll say about Brendan Fraser is it makes perfect sense that this was filmed right around the No Sudden Move era.
Okay.
Because, like, from what I understand, like, his physique has changed a lot since mm-hmm. then. But like this is definitely like he's just like back on the saddle yeah. Fraser mode.
He's bulky.
He's bulky. Yeah. He's bulky. But I think
he looks like an officer Farfel.
He looks like a peace officer. Like an officer Farfel.
Like when I hear the name Farfel, mm-hmm. I think like big dwarf.
Big
like
dwarf.
Like fantasy dwarf.
Yeah. So I mean, so he shows up and he's like
Gimli.
Yeah, Gimli. He's walking Peter Dinklage out of like down a prison hallway. And he like tells the guard to go away, and then he shoves him up against the wall, and he's like, "Listen." And we understand that he made a deal, like that Farfel knows a judge who was able
his
to
dad.
We later find out is his dad, but he was able to grant him parole. So he when he gets out, he'll get the emeralds that his mom stole 15 years ago. Which we only know about because later in the movie it gets revealed that the mom, who is still around and still alive, sent a letter to Peter Dinklage in jail. Yeah.
It all starts unravel from here.
None of this matters, by the way.
Like
none of this really matters.
It seems like clean enough where it's like, you are going to get me these emeralds because I got you out on parole.
Yeah.
Like that's kind of a clean like premise
yeah.
for this movie.
Yeah. And so he gives him a phone that he can track, yes. and then Peter Dinklage gets out of jail.
Yes.
Immediately he goes to Josh Brolin's place.
Yes.
Because he wants to like hire him for this last yes. job. But Josh Brolin has a wife and a kid on the way.
Yes. And Josh Brolin has just been fired.
He's just been fired from this.
He thought he was gonna get a promotion at like the chicken place he works at.
Yeah, but he gets fired because he got a call from the Department of
Labor
and Employee Relations.
Yes.
Asking about his
felony. The department that doesn't exist, but that will come back later.
Yeah. But he did not disclose that he was a felon.
Yes.
And so that got him fired.
Yes. And so he gets fired. He doesn't tell his wife this. He's like, what am I going to do?
I was going to get a family platter.
Yeah. He does get the family platter still.
He does still get the family
He doesn't
platter.
Get the employee discount.
Yeah.
Which is a good joke.
I did love that where he's like, well, you can still get it. You just don't get the employee
still get
discount.
The employee discount.
Because you're fired.
Yeah, because you're done. You're cooked.
You're murked.
You're murked.
You just weren't serving cunt like the rest of us.
Yeah, like Dwight D. Eisenhower. So he goes back home, doesn't tell his wife, but his in-laws are there. They're having a big party because his wife is expecting. They're mm-hmm. going to have the baby who they keep calling Blueberry.
Which is a joke.
Which is just like kind of a cute thing.
It's a cute thing.
To call your ND baby.
ND unborn child.
Yes. Because you don't know, I mean, male, female, whatever.
So call my ND baby dragon.
Yeah. It's like, you know,
we
being
not
like.
Addressing
it. You know, like when dragon's born, you know.
You'll find a real name.
Yeah, you'll figure out the real name.
Right,
like, call
dude,
whatever
it's
hell
dragon.
You want.
That's going on the birth
certificate.
That's
like Step Brothers was like, you can call me the dragon. I'm working on my John C. Reilly.
It's getting better.
Oh, my God. There's going to be a... Oh, my God, but I'm alive. I'm working on it.
It's not bad.
It's not terrible. You're like 60% there.
The thing about John C. Reilly that's difficult is that he looks and sounds like a 1920s cartoon character.
Yes.
Like he looks like he should be like stealing like apples from Mickey Mouse's tree and then getting chased up a skyscraper across various scaffolding and descending and ascending beams.
We're up on the Empire State Building.
Oh my God, Minnie Mouse, you're coming.
Oh my God.
Like, that's like his energy. Yeah. It's even his face. So Dinklage shows up and is like, you're going to help me.
And Brolin's like, no. No.
But then Dinklage makes a fool of himself at the party by getting high with Brolin's brother-in-law.
Yeah.
And running away and getting into a fight in the front yard. And Brolin's wife, Abby, played by Taylor Page, is like, you can't bring, like, I know you had a rough past, but you need to leave it behind you to be my husband and Blueberry's father.
Because at that point, she doesn't know that he went, like, he was a thief, right? Because she says something along the lines like, I've driven over the speed limit too, honey. Yeah. Like, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah, he uses that explicitly, like, I've driven over the speed limit too. And he's probably like, I didn't tell you I killed people. No.
I didn't tell you there's three bodies buried in the
backyard.
That
would be a really funny thing if they revealed that in the movie, that they're not just bank robbers, but they're cold-blooded murderers.
Yeah, it'd be good as hell, right?
It'd be pretty great, right? Murdering people.
But Dinklage murdering people, always good. Dinklage comes back, right?
Dinklage goes back to his motel.
Yes. He had art, and Brolin, realizing he has nowhere to go, comes and finds him.
After Farfel.
Shit out of
him. Oh, yeah. Our Farfel beats the shit out of him.
Yeets him into the bathtub.
Great.
Because the way he does it, too, is like.
This movie does have great energy anytime Fraser comes.
I had to replay that scene.
It is just Dinklage walking in, and it's like he goes flying against the wall, bounces off the wall into a bathtub,
and then he shoves him in the bathtub. It's like, where's your phone? Where's your phone, buddy?
And it's like Fraser's just going for it.
Yeah,
he's no holds barred, just everything. He does not stop. He does not pass a go. He does not collect $200.
I want you to remember every time I call you, it's like calling a little doggy when I say heel.
Yeah, he's great.
He's really serving it.
He's so funny.
Yeah,
just really playing this like kind of pathetic, like,
but psychopathic
psychopath.
Cop. Yeah.
And he's like, where's the phone?
Where's the phone?
Yes, he's with you. And he like sticks the phone with Dinklage and basically tells him, I need the emeralds tomorrow, more or less.
Yeah. Gives him a deadline.
Gives him a deadline. And he leaves. And Dinklage, now the heat's on. The next morning, he wakes up to Brolin sitting on his bed calling 911 because he's bleeding out. Because
he's bleeding and
I'm bleeding out, Scoob.
Dude, shout out to whoever was that ambulance or like the 911 operator in that movie. Because like as the phone saying it, she's like, hello? You called 911. Do you still need help?
Yeah, there's like a whole script for this woman in the background being like, hello? Do you need help?
Hello?
Hello?
And they just hang up.
They contracted somebody to do voiceover lines.
But Dinklage tells Brolin, like, it's an easy score. We're just getting some emeralds.
Which, it's not a lie, per se.
Not necessarily. It just leaves out some details.
Yeah.
And is like, all right, we're easy. We're just going to go ahead. We're going to do it, and you'll be set for life. And Brolin agrees.
Yeah.
And then, is it Marissa Tomei right away?
I think so. Yeah, that's where they go because he has to get a ID card to get into a construction site to steal a tractor to dig up a grave on a golf course.
Yes,
it's a lot of little bits and
like
pieces.
Like we said, it all starts to unravel from here.
So they go to Marissa Tomei first.
First, we do get Fraser
going to Judge Farfel's house. Yes. Yeah,
he like has to check in with his dad, who's like an emperor figure,
because
he's like a Darth Vader type, and this is the emperor.
Yeah, right.
Who is Judge Farfel, played by M. Emmett Walsh, in his final film performance.
His final film performance.
He passed away last year.
Yeah,
Or earlier this year. Emmett Walsh, one of the great character actors of all time. Kind of like working great with Fraser in this scene.
Yeah.
Emma Walsh's whole thing is in a wheelchair with a shotgun, and he's just shooting it off.
And then he's rolling backwards as he's shooting it.
Yeah, as he's shooting it. And Fraser's just like, Dad, I'm telling you, I'm getting the emerald. He's like screaming. He's like wigging out.
Yeah.
Like terrified of his father. Well, Emma Walsh is like almost killing him consistently. And there's a great running bit with like, Emma Walsh is like an in-home caretaker because he's old as hell.
Mm-hmm.
who took the day off, and there's like a replacement.
Anthony just like, keeps fucking it up. Anthony's only here Tuesdays and Wednesdays. Yeah. I'm whatever.
Yeah, and this guy's just like trying to dig like a little flower bed, essentially. It's like bullets are flying over his. He's like, I don't get paid enough for this.
It's some pretty good stuff.
It's a good little scene. Best scene in the movie, probably.
Probably.
Because then we do get, they go to Marissa Tomei's house, who's playing Bethesda Waingrow.
What a fucking name.
That's a great name, right?
That is a great
Waingrow. Bethesda Waingrow. Waingrow.
Yeah. And so...
I'm talking to a dead man on the other end of this line, Waingrow. so that's a Heat reference for those who know Heat.
We have a need to journey upriver to see Bethesda.
Oh, dress. I was doing Dead Man's Chest.
I was just pulling it out of my ass.
Bethesda Waingrow.
Bethesda Waingrow.
Who's like an animal rights activist who works at like
a construction site. She's like an inside man? Like,
I don't know what's going on.
I don't know what's going on with that.
I don't know what's going on.
But
she's like very free spirited, like former hippie type.
It's implied that her and Dinklage have a thing.
They had a pen pal thing from prison. And he promised her, like, I'm going to fuck the brains out of you when I get out of prison.
Great.
And that's what she believes he is showing up to do.
So many fucking spam calls because of the election.
Yeah.
They're just trying to make sure you're voting for the winner.
Yeah.
I've already turned in my ballot, bitches.
Yeah. Please.
Please stop.
But, like, he shows up with his brother, and she's like, okay, well, let's go to the other room. And so, there's a thing on my... lap.
She is a cow on your lap.
Yeah.
It's called jeans.
There's a thing. It's like a little
there's a thing.
So she and Dinklage go to the other room.
And they mosh.
And they mosh, which is great.
They mosh. Yeah.
A good joke.
Yeah.
Because you're like expecting them to have, you know, crazy wild sex because that's what they're building up to. And then they just kind of
She says a passing line, like, don't feed Samuel to Brolin.
I know she's like, when she's leaving, she goes, oh, there's like juice in the fridge.
Yeah.
The green stuff, Samuel's,
don't touch that.
And I even wrote, Samuel's stuff sounds pretty interesting and whatever the green shit is.
And like in, you know, this is one of the things where I do have to give the movie credit. Because it's like, you would expect in a movie like this that like her husband is Samuel and he would show up and like fight Brolin thinking that Brolin is cheating on him with his wife. That's what you would expect.
That's the classic bit.
Yeah. Instead, a fucking orangutan comes around the corner.
Walks into the living room.
Lights up a joint.
Shuts the door.
Yeah.
Most menacing fucking...
Yeah. Wearing a pair of tighty whities, which is, I think,
this is
a great
diaper.
I think a great joke.
Yeah.
Lights up a joint, takes a hit, and then starts sexually assaulting Brolin.
Yeah. He forces Brolin's hand into... Yeah. His nether regions.
Yes.
And makes him start to jack off. Yeah.
And then Marissa Tomei overhears this happening. Ooh, and is like, ooh. You guys aren't from the animal rights group, are you?
And he's like, yes. It's like, oh my God. Like, yeah. I mean, no. Yeah. He has no idea what's
and
the
so
right
she
answer.
She runs out and Brolin gets chased out by Samuel the orangutan.
true love story.
I am glad to see that Maurice from the Planet of the Apes movies is still getting
still getting work.
I don't know if I feel
I was a little worried when they had a big time jump that Maurice might not be getting work, but I'm glad to see that he's still.
Don't you think that this happened before the events of Rise of the Planet of the Apes?
So this would be
Maurice is the actor in the movies.
I hear that. Yes.
Sidebar: Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes came out this year. Pretty good. Best part of that movie, I was so happy to see Maurice have a scene at the beginning of the movie before the time jump.
Yeah.
Maurice is my number one, my one and only, my truest.
Your oldest friend.
Me and Maurice, like, bros to hoes together forever. All right. So they get chased out of the house by the orangutan.
You want to fuck this orangutan?
I do kind of want to fuck this orangutan. So
Maurice or the one in this
Brolin runs out of the front door. And then Dinklage barrel rolls out of the window of the upper level.
Very clearly like a doll stunt thing. But
it's also clear he has stolen her ID card, Marissa Tomei's ID card, to get into the construction site.
Which is all they need.
They jump back in the car while the orangutan is banging on the window, and then they rip out of there as fast as they can.
Yeah. A funny bit.
Back to the motel.
Yes, back at the motel.
Where Dinklage is getting a shower. Because and they keep commenting on how Brolin still smells like the orangutan.
He's just laying on the bed in his underwear.
Yeah, with hand sanitizer. He keeps using so much hand sanitizer.
It's a lot of sanitizer.
I like the sanitizer is a good bit. He's not washing the hands. He's just using sanitizer.
Yeah. And then I think, is this the part
he finds the letter?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha.
He finds a letter from their mom, their collective mother.
The same mom.
They have the same mom because they're twins.
Collective mother because they're twins. They're brothers.
Forgot they're brothers. World credits.
And realizing that their mom reached out to Dinklage in prison, but never reached out to Brolin.
Yeah. Because Brolin would.
He's like, how long have you known? He's like, I plan to tell you eventually. And they get into a little fight. Brolin storms out
in his underwear. In his underwear. Clothes. And then Dinklage storms out in a towel.
Yes.
Just because.
Yeah. And Brolin is like, how. Where is she? And then the next apartment hotel room over opens, and Alex Glenn Close as their mother
steps out, and he in a wave of shock steps back, falls off the second floor railing onto a van in the parking lot.
And then a good joke right here cuts immediately to him in an ambulance being checked by EMTs. Yeah. That's always hits when you do that.
Yeah,
always funny.
Brolin is kind of, I mean, it is like very like slapsticky in this movie. Yeah, I don't know.
The best iteration is the nice guys when Ryan Gosling like wraps his fist in like a rag, punches a window, slices his hand open, vomits, falls over, cuts to an ambulance speeding down the road, cuts inside the ambulance like, we're losing him! And then it cuts immediately to him being rolled out of the hospital by a nurse in a wheelchair. Like, that's the best version of that joke. So quick, so effective.
Yeah.
This one, he's fine.
He's okay.
The three of them go out to like a bar. They go out to like a karaoke bar, karaoke bar.
Can we speed through this? Because this is like, why did you call me mom? He's like, I'm sorry, I'm dying of brain cancer. Yeah.
Stuart, you actually just sped through it. That was all we really had. Can we all speed through it? He drinks a lot of dollar margaritas.
Yes, and they sing karaoke together. And
they
then
sing Every Rose Has Its Thorns.
And they make up.
Yeah,
and
they make up.
They're fine now. They're happy.
That's the power of friendship.
So now they have everything they need. She tells them the story of what happened the night that Glenn, who was cool as hell, ate the diamonds.
And he died.
And then died, and she buried him
in
a random property near a water tower.
Is now a golf with course. That whole idea of being like, I'm going to base it. Like, what if they tear the water tower down?
Yeah, what happens if they get rid of the water tower? You're fucked.
You're
fucked. Crazy it kind of works out.
Now we just have air tags.
Yeah. Well, if you put an air tag in the dirt and then buried it, I doubt it would work.
Siri, can I put air tags on my gems?
You think?
Please?
I think it would.
We'd try it.
The only problem is, the battery would die.
Yeah, the battery would die
for a while. But
so I have an air tag that dies every 2 months. It sucks.
But that's why, then you just pin it on your phone.
Yeah.
Pins are forever.
Hidden emerald stash.
But they go to Marisa Tomei's workplace.
Brolin does, and he steals a
forklift.
A tractor.
Tractor.
Bulldozer.
Bulldozer. We're
it's like part bulldozer, but it has like a crane from the Midwest. In the back.
A tractor.
Wait, is it called a backhoe?
No, it's a bulldozer.
It's a front hoe. Come on,
Stuart. It is actually a backhoe. This is the exact thing that they steal.
This is a backhoe.
Okay.
It's a Caterpillar backhoe.
But what's a bulldozer?
A bulldozer has like the big like. Flat.
I think it's just the
one. A bulldozer is designed for dozing. A backhoe digs. Like you stick it in, you have dirt, and you lift and you drop it.
Okay. I'm wrong.
Someone clearly didn't watch Big Rigs in Action growing up.
My family was just like a,
Do you know Big Rigs?
Tractors.
You know Big Rigs in Action is?
No,
fucking VHS tapes.
My grandpa Richard, who owned like a lot of tractors, would be really disappointed.
You pop these motherfuckers in the VHS player.
Yeah.
And you sit there and you just watch trucks lifting dirt and pushing things while metal music plays.
Falling to sleep while you talk about it.
When I was 3 years old, it was the most engaging shit I'd ever seen in my life.
That's fantastic.
But anyway, they take the backhoe and bust through the fence of a golf course.
And they find the spot where they have to start digging.
Glenn identifies the exact spot. She nails it.
I was kind of hoping like she would go to do it and the tower would just be gone. And she'd be like, fuck.
Yeah. But they use the backhoe and they find Glenn's body.
Mm-hmm.
And they scoop it up in the backhoe.
And they dig for the emeralds and they find the emeralds.
Yeah, Brolin like sticks his hand into Glenn's chest.
It took a little too long to find that.
Yeah.
For a guy that's all small.
And it's like very noxious smell and like they're vomiting and everything. Yeah. Meanwhile, there's a bunch of golfers.
Yeah. Shout out to the guys that take the game of golf very seriously.
Construction's on Tuesdays and Thursdays. Today is Wednesday.
Yeah.
We should stop them.
And then, so they get the emeralds out and then they're being pursued by golf carts. And then a bit that is funny in concept. And should have been a little wilder because a chase scene occurs.
Yeah.
Very explicitly inspired by Mad Max Fury Road.
Yeah.
It even has like the one guy with the golf club.
Yeah.
The flag like on the back, like the throwing things that they use in Mad Max.
Yeah.
But instead they just like kind of pull up next to it and like yell at them. And then they use the backhoe and they knock the carts over.
And that's it. That's the bit.
Because like.
Bit's over.
It should be. There should be like two more golf carts. And this should be like a high octane chase scene that comes in out of fucking nowhere. That would be funny.
Yeah, it would be very funny.
Like they should be throwing golf clubs like the Mad Max.
There should be like a swarm of golf carts.
Yes,
like more than this golf course.
The music should be crazy. Like this needs to actually be a very high octane action scene.
Yeah,
for it to be funny.
I want at least one explosion.
Yeah,
like one golf cart tips over.
It's not funny. It's not funny.
It just happens very quickly, and then it's like, sorry. Not the right one, my bad.
Time out.
But they escape. They have the emeralds.
Mm-hmm. Now they're in the woods.
Yeah, they're wrapped in like a glove.
And we hear, oh, Munger!
Fraser shows up and once again yeets Dinklage across
the room. I do love
room.
That Dinklage hides behind the backhoe at first and his head's sticking out. And like they don't, and he just comes around a corner and just tosses his ass.
Yeah. And so basically Fraser is like on top of Dinklage, like beating his ass in. And he's like, where are my emeralds?
Yeah.
I do a pretty good Fraser.
You do a pretty good Fraser in this movie.
Yeah. In this movie. And then
Brolin tries to fight Farfel off.
But Brolin cannot. Is far less superior.
Yeah. Fraser just has, to quote Martin Scorsese, one of the great directors of all time, he has that girth. Do you remember that?
Yes. I remember
Martin
that.
Martin Scorsese was in an interview talking about why he cast Fraser in Killers of the Flower Moon. He said, you know, he just had the stature. He had that girth.
That makes me feel gross.
No, like
he's a girthy man.
You watch this movie and you're like, he does have that girth.
So this proves that Rick O'Connell clears Thanos in a fight.
Yes.
Yes.
Proof.
Rick O'Connell clears Thanos in a fight.
End of Endgame, Rick O'Connell comes out and shoots a shotgun blast and blows up Thanos.
And so he gets them all in handcuffs.
Yes.
And then he sees Glenn close with the emeralds.
And he's like, you could choose your sons or you could choose the diamond, the emeralds. And she's like, and she just runs off.
She runs away. They're like, did she really run away? And this is like, it could have been a really funny scene, but it's like the three of them chase after her.
Yes.
I thought that's what they were doing at first.
Right. It's then.
Because Fraser's driving the car and the two of them are in the backseat handcuffed.
I still think one of my favorite bits in that whole thing is when he's holding them hostage and she runs and he's like, what?
Yeah.
and she gets away. She gets in a car and she gets away. So then cut to them in a car, Fraser in the front seat, they're in the back seat.
And he's like, you boys better shut up back there. He's now like playing a dad figure to them.
Yeah, he's like, I will pull this car over.
I am justice.
Yeah. He's really funny.
He's good.
Even if like there's no like textual purpose for this scene.
Yeah.
Like he's playing a father figure to them, but that's never really been something that's been set up by the movie so far.
Yeah.
But it's great because he's just wigging out.
And they start fighting, and it's a clear case where it's where they're fighting to distract the bad guy so they can land a punch on him.
Yes.
Which they do.
Yeah.
And he gets knocked out and the car stops.
And the car crashes into a massive billboard for Vidalia onions. They blow through it and the car stops. And it's kind of like a funny composition of the car broken down. Like surrounded by this big Vidalia onions billboard.
That's great.
It's like one of the little jokes that you're like, that's amusing.
That's me this entire movie.
The whole movie should be amusing. That. The whole movie should be like little things like that.
Yeah.
But they pull Fraser out. They drive away in his cop car and pursue their mother, who they find like pawning off the emeralds to some guy.
It's Uncle
somewhere.
We forgot this bit that there's a uncle in this story,
yes,
that they keep referring to, that he's a lawyer but not one of the good lawyers,
yeah,
and it's the guy that she usually goes to pawn off like jewels for money.
So she pawns off the emeralds and she gets a big bag of money.
Big duffel.
Yep. They find her there. Bag of money. She runs off. They pursue to like an abandoned mall.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, Fraser has called a cab that he has hijacked.
Yes.
Which is a good bit. When he's driving the cab.
And he is bloodied up.
Yeah, he's like covered in blood, driving this taxi with like pure scorn on his face. Pure veins
rage.
Bursting out. He's and then it just cuts to the guy in the passenger seat who's the actual driver of the cab. Like, I don't know if I should letting you drive, man. It's a great joke.
But then a chase scene ensues between the brothers and Glenn Close inside this abandoned Atlanta
shopping mall.
Yeah.
Indie shopping mall.
You imagine how like 15 years ago, how hard it was to find an abandoned mall, and now it's the easiest location to find.
You know, right? I guess I'm really quickly looping back. I guess a big problem I have with this style of location shooting is that there's no specificity to it.
Yeah, no, this could be in Cincinnati.
Like this could be in Cincinnati, and like there's never specifically like, well, this is the part of Atlanta that we are in.
Yeah.
They're just like using that because this is a mall and this is a farm and whatnot. Anyway.
Like what's the significance of it happening in a mall? Like, is there anything with a mall in their past? Like,
yeah,
there's nothing. It's literally just like, oh, this is a cool place where a chase could finalize.
Should have happened in an abandoned bank.
Like just something that like connects any sort of story thread whatsoever. Like this is literally just because like
it's clearly like there's an abandoned mall and we thought we could film it, which is fine.
We could film there for cheap.
Yeah.
It's an easy place the cops can surround.
Yes.
But there be a realistic way.
It has high production value to it. Intrinsically, because it's a big space.
Yeah. So,
but they're chasing their mom. They get the money, and then Fraser shows up.
Fraser shows up with a shotgun and just like a full commando.
Yeah, he's in full lunatic like.
I found you.
He's in full like mass shooter mode at this point.
He is
and he's like just so anyway. I started blasting. He's just like popping shots off.
Yeah, everybody's running. And at one point, it's like Peter Dinklage and Josh
really
Brolin.
Really quick. I want to say how Fraser is introduced in this because we skipped over it.
Uh-oh.
Is you just hear a shot, and then you just hear, Jeremiah was a bullfrog.
Yeah. It was a good friend of mine.
And he's walking down the escalator.
I never understood a single word he said.
It's Fraser. Shit. Being shot from low, so he like looks like menacing.
Yeah,
coming down this escalator, and he's like kind of swaying with this shotgun.
It is the best bit in the movie.
Yeah, he's this got is the great best bit. Physical timing, great comedy to this.
Oh,
he's going like he's so funny, and he deserves a better movie around him.
Yes,
but he's just like Jeremiah was bullfrog.
Where are you guys? I got shots fired in the mall.
Yeah, the cops are surrounding.
I love that they're like, put the gun down and put your hands above your head. It's okay. I'm a peace officer.
That gets great. He's like, I'm a peace officer.
See, this is the juice of the movie is Fraser in this whole bit. Yeah.
They're hiding behind various mall things.
We cut to
shooting.
The characters we don't quite care enough about.
Yes. How do they disarm Fraser? I know.
Well, it's a thing where
they give him the money.
They give him the money.
But they've booby trapped.
Yeah, there's like a
but they booby trapped
it with like a spray can.
Yeah, but it sprays him, and then he trips, and then a tree falls over. It catches on fire and explodes.
It crushes him.
It's pretty funny because he's still
he's
alive.
Like,
and then he's like, it's like there's a tree on top of him. His leg is on fire.
Yeah,
it's like oh, birds.
Dinklage comes over
birds.
And puts the fire.
Puts the fire out.
Thank you, kind stranger.
Thank you,
daddy.
And then, so now they're in the front of the mall.
Yeah.
Cops are surrounded. It's them. It's the brothers and Glenn Close. Glenn Close gives Dinklage the money. And she says, she grabs shotgun. She's like, I'm going to go out. There's a parking garage you can sneak out through.
There goes my hero.
Yes, literally.
Watch him.
And then she turns around and says, oh, by the way, I'm not dying.
And I was like,
that's cool. great.
That was like a weird time to throw that out there. Because I was like, they're keeping this up long enough. Just have her dying.
Yeah, just like, have her like do a self-sacrifice little thing because she's not going to live for very long.
I'm going to die in a month anyway.
But like, I guess it's like to say it's like she's doing it for actual selfless reasons rather than like, well, I'm going to die. So whatever.
Yeah. Just by the way, I'm actually not dying.
I'm not dying.
I'm not dying. I'm not fucking leaving. I'm not fucking leaving. but I just watched... I don't know why I'm bringing this up, but it's for some reason. Like, I just watched Trap, the Shyamalan movie.
I just watched that for the first time a couple days ago.
I shook Stuart's hand because he said he watched Trap.
Well, it was just the moment where it's like, there was a moment where when Glenn Close steps out and you think it's like, oh, that's the end. Like, she's going to prison and they're going to flee. Yeah. And I thought she was going to like do like the suicide by cop thing, which might have been a little darker.
Yeah, it might have been insane. Can you imagine the movie ends with that?
Justin, I mean, listen, if Frasier could get crushed by a fiery, blazing Christmas tree.
But he survives.
He does survive. But there was a moment where I thought like it was, they're going to escape. And then it cuts back to her
and it'd be
the similar Trap like Josh Hartnett thing where she figures a way out for some fucking reason, which they actually kind of do at the end of this movie, which I don't know. Anyway, Trap, okay movie.
Trap,
you thought Trap was an okay
what
movie?
A joy
that was okay.
Did you watch Trap, Justin?
Yeah, I watched it for the first time last week, 2 weeks ago, something like that.
So it's okay. How good is it in Trap when like you spend, spoiler for Trap, if you haven't seen it yet, you should watch Trap. How good is it? Because like the first, you know, half and some change of that movie, it's just like this like Hitman style thriller, like the video game where it's like, you're just watching this guy like case it out and try to figure out how to escape. And clearly like Shyamalan at that, like it's halfway through the stream, he's like, I don't think this is sustainable for the rest of the movie. We're going to pivot. And it becomes a slasher movie.
Yeah.
About, Lady Raven inside of the house.
Yeah.
With him as like Michael Myers.
Yeah.
And then she gets him arrested. And then it becomes his family domestic drama with him with the axe. It's The Shining suddenly. It's so good. Sean was just like, all right, I'm going to change up the POV. This movie is Josh Hartnett's the lead. Actually, now we're going to have Lady Raven be the lead for the second act. And we're going to have his wife be the lead for the third act. And you're just going to change up POV to keep it fresh. It's so good.
I didn't realize it wasn't just taking place in the stadium.
I will say, I have one thing to say about Trap that I have major problems with. M. Night Shyamalan, notoriously cool guy. Films all of his movies in Philadelphia for a long time. Trap, filmed in like Toronto, supposed to be Philadelphia. That building does not exist in Philadelphia. M. Night, what are you doing? If you can't film in Philly, that's fine. But don't be denigrating.
Don't say that it's...
Don't be saying it's Philly. You know this. You made your movies in Philly for like 15 years, buddy. It's fine.
It's an okay
movie. It's fine. You did a lot. Right. You did a lot for Philly.
This is a beef. I think we have to just let him get out.
Yeah, I agree. So anyway, they escape. Glenn Close gets arrested.
Yes.
And it's basically like, how does this like money situation... Because it gets like passed around too much. Like we cut to like... Josh Brolin showing up at his house with his wife and his in-laws like for dinner.
Yeah.
And she like does the thing. It's like, don't you ever do that ever again.
Yeah.
It's like, I lost my job today.
Yeah.
But I'll find a new one.
Yeah.
Didn't you say something about an orangutan?
Yeah. Yeah.
I jacked it off.
And then he sits down and then Peter Dinklage shows up. It's like, yay, they're family.
Yeah. And they all sit around and have Thanksgiving dinner together.
Yeah. And then they're doing the dishes, the two brothers, and what is it like?
Well, because I know Brolin gave
his money
to the judge to get
Dinklage off. Yes, right. And I missed that scene, but yes.
Yeah.
There's not really much to that scene.
I mean, it's
he just shows up.
It's the final scene of M. Emmett Walsh's.
I guess suppose we should respect
extremely this. Long and storied career. I will have to give it respect for that. It does have this like weird like anti-authority message like that the rest of the movie isn't playing with.
Yeah,
because like he gives him the money and is like, "It won't make you happy. Your son hates you," or something like that. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, and I'm almost like, "I got years yet," which no, you didn't. Sorry. sorry, the joke was right there. But he's just like. All you rich guys think that you have everything, but you don't really know what's going on. And it's like, wait, where is this coming from?
Yeah, it's very out of left
field. Yeah, this movie is like at no point has set itself up as like a class struggle movie.
Mm-hmm.
Very weird like thing to throw in at the end.
Yeah,
it's fine. It's whatever. They all have Thanksgiving together.
So yeah, Brolin gave his money, shared the money to the judge, so Peter Dinklage could get off the case. And then, but Peter Dinklage then tells him, "I put my share of the money into a trust for your future kid, Blueberry."
Yes.
He's like, "What the fuck?
Yeah,
we're not naming our kid Blueberry. That was a joke." It's like, "Well, if they want $2.5 million, you will."
Cut to them at the prison, seeing the mom, right?
Yeah, seeing the mom and Brolin with the baby. The baby. And it's like, "I want you to introduce you to Blueberry."
Yeah.
That's a good bit. That's like,
it's very funny that they're locked into naming the kid Blueberry.
Yeah. And that's it, right? Yeah. That's the end of the movie.
Well, doesn't JD sneak something to his mom?
Yes. Oh, yeah. When he passes the baby and then she passes him emerald. Two extra emeralds.
Yes, that she must have had. Yes. Maybe she ate them and chat them out. I don't know.
She did eat them because it cuts back to, this is the trap moment that I was talking about, where it cuts back to her like surrendering to the police and she turns around, holds a shotgun up, drops shotgun, and then she like
eats two emeralds.
Eats two emeralds.
Was implying that the whole family will be fine and there's more money to be had.
Yeah. How much each fucking emerald like?
The movie should end with like a cut to Fraser.
Oh shit. Sorry.
Doing something insane.
Yeah. Right. Cause you don't see him after he gets crushed, right?
You don't. Like, it should end with like Fraser,
at the Thanksgiving
in prison
dinner.
Or something.
He no, at the Thanksgiving
up.
Dinner
or being like whipped by
think,
his dad.
I like to think he joins the family.
It should be like Fast and Furious, where the villain of the previous
I'm sorry
movie joins
that
the
I
joins the barbecue
you
at
down
the end.
And threw you up against a bathroom wall.
Brothers Two, Farvel joins.
I think basically every movie should end like Fast and Furious, where the villain of the previous movie joins the barbecue at the end.
I agree with that.
And then Academy Award winner Rina Moreno is for some reason there.
And Dom Toretto shows up and goes, "Guys, we're family."
You know what's funny is Fast X came out last summer, ended with an insane cliffhanger, and they have not started filming the sequel yet.
Have they run into like financing problems because of it? Because didn't the part one not do so well?
It did like okay.
But not as well as they wanted.
Yeah. Fast X part two will be the end of the series. But it's been like greenlit. The director's ready to shoot it.
What's going on?
I have no idea.
What's going on?
It's very, I mean, Vin is off Dwayne shooting Riddick 4 right now.
Oh, I'm more excited about that.
He is making Riddick 4.
I am more excited about that.
I am also excited about Riddick 4.
I cannot wait for Riddick 4.
Riddick Furia.
Me, a secret Riddick fan. Riddick.
No, the thing that makes the Riddick movies good is that none of them have been successes.
But they're each successful on their own merit, which
is
funny.
No, that's the thing is that Vin will make a Riddick movie. I mean, Pitch Black made money.
I love this conversation we have, by the way.
We've talked about this before, but like, Vin will make a Riddick movie and it will not be like a box office success. So he'll make four more Fast and Furious movies. And then he's like, "All right, I made you four Fast and Furious movies and you made billions of dollars. Give me funding for another Riddick."
It's like his passion. The funny bit that I like with Jeff is like, Pitch Black, the first Riddick movie, very standalone B horror movie, very in the vein of like Alien and shit like that. Just very standalone. There's not much like, and when it ends, it feels like a good ending.
Yeah. It's like a standalone.
It's a very
movie.
Like nice quick package film. But then you get the Chronicles of Riddick.
Yeah, Chronicles of Riddick is the most insane.
What'd you say? What'd you call
it? It's a meathead classic.
Meathead classic.
It's a movie that has so many ideas bursting in it. They're all dumb.
Mm-hmm.
The opening of the movie is there's an emperor of the universe who's like leading an army of ghouls. The Necrons. And he absorbs souls. And you're like, how?
Yeah, it's this army of like undead, but not quite undead. Yeah. They're
one
led
of them
by
is Carl
undead.
Urban.
Carl Urban's in it.
Yeah.
And they're like sweeping through the galaxy invading, and they got like this ultra death ray weapon. Yes. Whatever it is. Riddick, meanwhile, is just
like,
living
his
best life.
The detail of him absorbing souls is like so secondary to the important of the movie that I think about it so much.
Do you know what the majority of that movie is? It's like him on a prison planet
busting out.
Okay, that's the one with like the giant sandstorm or some shit, right? Like
it's like the solar storm because like it's the prison. This is a fucking cool screenwriter idea that they had to shoehorn into this meathead classic movie about Necron empire invading the universe, but shoehorned in the like the the middle 60% of the movie. There's this really cool concept of a prison that, like, you can't go over the surface on the day because it's like Venus, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Like, the pitch of Chronicles of Riddick is like, what if you followed up, like, Alien with Cloud Atlas?
And because then it also introduces, like, that Riddick is a part of this, like, race of people called
Furian.
The Furians, and they're, like, the chosen race who's supposed to topple down the Empire, so it's, like, a prophecy thing.
Yeah.
Like, all this stemming from the fact that this guy could just wreck shit of monsters on this planet.
The first Riddick is, there's a blind guy named Richard B. Riddick who can see in the dark.
That's all there is to that movie!
And he helps a few guys who crashed on the planet get to a different ship. That's the first movie. So the Solar Storm one you're talking about is the second one? But then the third Riddick.
The third movie comes out. The third Riddick is just,
all right, Riddick is back on a planet. It is dark and he's helping some people out and killing some other guys.
But the juice is that they can't ignore the events of the second movie.
Because there's so much.
Yeah. Because what happens at the end of the second movie is he becomes the emperor.
He
does a mano-a-mano fight against the emperor guy and kills him. And because they do this fucking, you take what you kill thing, he becomes the new emperor of the Necrons.
The opening of Riddick 3 is him being like, I don't want to be emperor no more. And Carl Urban's like, okay, you can go to that planet over there. And he's like, all right. And then he goes to the planet.
All right.
Goes to the planet.
And then it's just like him on a planet again.
It's back to pitch black.
It's just pitch black again.
It's pitch black 2.
So what I'm hearing is Riddick 4 is going to be a new emperor.
Riddick
comes to this planet and it's like a whole thing all over again.
Riddick Furia.
Oh, it is definitely going to be Riddick another meathead classic.
Riddick Fury. Riddick finally returns to his homeworld, a place he barely remembers and one he fears might be left in ruins by the Necromongers. But there he finds other Furians fighting for their existence against a new enemy, and some of these Furians are more like Riddick than he could ever have imagined.
They can see better in the dark than he can.
You were born. I was born in it. Molded by it.
I didn't see the light until I was a young man, and by then it was only blinding.
Good shit.
The Riddick movies are great. I'm very excited for Riddick 4. Fast X Part 2 has not started production yet.
That's great.
Do they know how they're solving the cliffhanger?
I haven't seen it, but I can guarantee
Can I tell you what the end of Fast X is?
You said it on the podcast many times, Jeff.
Justin.
Yeah.
Fast X ends with Vin Diesel. John Cena dies.
What?
John Cena dies.
What?
Vin Diesel is at essentially the bottom of the Hoover Dam with his son in a car. Jason Momoa detonates the dam. Essentially about to pour so much water down on Vin Diesel. Meanwhile, Tyrese and Ludacris are in a military plane that crashes right next to the dam.
Uh-huh.
And they're presumed dead. And then it cuts to the end credits.
Oh my God.
And they're like, and also in the Arctic, Michelle Rodriguez finds a nuclear submarine piloted by Gal Gadot.
Oh, I forgot she's in that.
That is the end of that movie, and you're like, huh?
Yeah.
And then we'll make the other one eventually. What do you mean? You'll make the other one eventually.
Well, you know who's going to save him? Optimus Prime.
He should.
The crossover we really need is Transformers and Fast and Furious.
So obviously there's not a lot of like post-text to discuss about this movie just yet because it just came out. It's not going to make a lot of money because it had a very limited
theatrical release.
And it's going straight on Prime. So there's not really going to be a lot of box office information on it.
Right. Yeah, there's not really any box office information. This is when I watched it, it said it was number 6 on Prime.
Oh.
I'm sure like some people are watching it. Sure, whatever.
Well, but like Prime can just... They can make anything that. Number
I'm sorry,
six.
Those top 10 things that they show
they're
so are rigged.
They're so fake.
The Netflix ones especially were...
Thanksgiving 2, number 2?
Netflix is my favorite because like they'll post on Twitter. They're like, this is the most watched movie of all time ever. For every single one of the releases. I'm like, not all of them can be hits.
Yeah.
They can't all be winners.
No.
Come on, guys.
Come on.
You can't tell me that like Teen Date Prom 2 made set... like.
Billions.
80 trillion watch hours. You can't.
You can't.
Do you think Netflix just has it on loop in their office so that it gets to number one? So they're like, no, we're telling the
truth. No, they got all the AIs watching it to write more of them.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't really have much post-text. It gets like fairly negative reviews. People just being like, it's not really that funny. It's kind of like the overall, because it's like, it's got a good idea, but it's not really that funny. Not really any antics in this.
Mm-hmm.
Not very quirky.
And like, quirky. I know Dinklage did a good amount of press for this movie, though.
He did, weirdly.
He did a Hot Ones episode.
Radio Times, Dinklage is great, but Fraser's deranged performance takes the crowd.
Yeah.
Yep. Or takes the crown.
That's absolutely right.
100% stand by that.
Like, Dinklage is doing his normal thing. Yeah. And like, I'd say like, I wish it were better utilized in this movie. I just don't. I've never once really cared that much about
Brothers. I'm curious what happened. Like, if this just kind of like didn't really work out the way they wanted it to. Because as I said, like, Palm Springs is great. Mm-hmm. Palm Springs is a fantastic movie. Mm-hmm. Directed by the same guy. With a lot of ideas, a lot of heart, very funny.
Sophomore movie.
A recurring bit in Palm Springs is that he's trapped in a time loop. J.K. Simmons is also trapped in this time loop. But J.K. Simmons is trapped in the time loop 2 hours away. And every day he drives 2 hours to hunt Andy Samberg down with a bow and arrow.
That's great.
Because he's pissed about being trapped in this time loop.
Nice.
Good movie. This is not so.
Not a great movie. No.
But yeah, I think that not really many people are talking about this movie. I don't have a lot of like Letterboxd mutuals who watch this.
There wasn't
really much fanfare when it came out.
Yeah, I think if people are going to watch this movie, it'll be for the reason that it's like, oh, like Fraser. Honestly, I think Fraser, well, who am I to say? I'm biased. Of course I see Fraser in a movie. I don't want to watch it again.
Exactly. Yeah. Every time.
But like, am I crazy to think that maybe he's like a big pull of this movie?
Yes.
Even probably more so than Dinklage and Brawlin.
Yeah, I would say Fraser's kind of like, they got lucky.
See, it's easy for you and I to say this, though, Jeff, because we're very much hyped for...
Brendan Fraser gets the and on this movie.
Yeah.
Or the with. It's Josh Brolin, Peter Dinklage, Glenn Close, Marissa Tomei with Brendan Fraser.
Mm-hmm.
I think initially people will watch it for Dinklage, but then Fraser will be the one that...
He was a big part of the trailer. Like, the trailer was all about Fraser.
Oh, I never watch any of the trailers or anything.
Yeah.
That was kind of like the secret thing about the trailers. It was all about like it started with Fraser and they were a lot of emphasis on him in the movie.
Yeah.
Of course. They knew like, okay, Fraser's hot. We'll kind of make this, you know, we'll try and advertise his involvement.
Yeah, he is. Sorry.
Yeah, he is.
He's
so hot. So hot right now.
So
Fraser, so hot right now.
So hot right now.
All right. I mean, is there any other...
I don't really have much else to say about this movie. I don't think. Whoa.
All right.
Whoa.
Sorry, are you ready for that intro? All right, outro.
Oh, my God.
What? Did I rush you?
Justin, do you have anything else to say? Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, guys.
I was going to time it all out.
I was thanking him. Did he have anything else to say? You start playing the music.
Oh my God.
I'm okay. I mean, there's really not a lot more we can cover on this movie. I mean, I feel like we've hit all the points. Stuart, play that bitch.
Okay, here we go. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Fraser's Edge. We appreciate you guys always. Please remember to rate, review, and subscribe on whatever platform you're listening on. As a reminder, we're available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and YouTube. Come to the Reddit, r/Travolting. Find me on Twitter, @JeffWSweeney. Special thanks, as always, to Rebecca Johnson for the graphic design and Michael Van Bodegan-Smith for the theme music. Make sure to tune in next week for our episode on Destination Wedding, Back to Winona. In theory, shouldn't we have used the Fraser's Edge music?
Oop.
This is an episode of the Fraser's Edge.
You're just now bringing this up.
I'm just realizing this.
Nope. I'm going to figure this out. Hold on. Stand
fucking by.
Because it's me doing the intro for Fraser's Edge, right?
Hold on a second.
I think we should keep this in the episode.
Do you remember?
This is actually perfect.
I can play the music, but do you remember?
Yeah, I can. Don't be wrong. I got it.
Do you remember the time?
First night of September.
Hold on, let me see. I got it down.
Actually, don't. It's November 2nd. I don't know what I was doing. No,
Sad News Bears.
Sad News Bears.
You don't remember what you were doing on the 21st night of September?
You know what? I don't. I checked the calendar. No fucking idea. I had nothing on that day.
Oh, that's the Christmas one. I downloaded the wrong one. Shit.
I downloaded the wrong one.
Shit. All right. Hold on. I'm getting the right one in here.
That's what she said.
What?
Huh?
Campbell.
Cut it out.
All right. So do you want to go?
Yeah, I'll go.
We're still recording.
Yeah.
All right.
I got it.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Fraser's Edge, hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore, with very special guest, Justin Campbell. Have a, enjoy the episode.
Covering Brothers. That wasn't part of the intro at all.
A very special episode.
I think that works, right?
Hold on a second.
Are we doing it again?
Hold on a second. I'm just going to...
We got to put this all at the end of the episode.
Yeah, of course.
This is what you guys put on your Patreon.
Whenever we fuck up the beginning, we splice it out and we put it on the end all of right, the episode.
Fuck yeah.
Hold on. Let me just...
That's like a little treat.
Mm-hmm. God, I've done for so those of you that made it to the end of the podcast, the blooper.
No, so this is...
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen.
The Fraser's Edge.
That's how you've done it.
Hosted by Jeff Sweeney and Stuart Elmore.
This is low energy.
Covering Killers of the Flower Moon.
I was low energy.
What's the problem? Enjoy the episode.
But now you know how you've done it, right?
Yeah.
It's
that was good energy, though. Yeah. The one you had.
Yeah. I'm going to do the energy, but...
All right. Let's do this one more time.
Yeah. Ladies and gentlemen.